Just a deep breath after the football weekend is in the books. We'll, of course, talk more about Texans and Cowboys, but I want to know from you, where do you see coaching changes in the very near future? Of course, we've already seen the Jets and the... Shoot, why am I forgetting? Thank you, the Saints with Darren Rizzi and the clogged toilet. Crazy that these things can escape you when you talk about them every day. The Jets and the Saints have made in-season coaching changes. I would be stunned if either one of their interim head coaches ends up keeping the job. I can think of at least three, four franchises right now that I would not at all be surprised if they made changes at their head coaching jobs. And that, of course, means an entirely new coaching staff in most cases. So where do you see them? Online at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get a spot up there. Here's one place that will not be looking for a new head coach, and that's Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers, because they have found a match made in heaven.
Hand off to Dobbins, and there goes Dobbins on his horse to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, into the end zone! Touchdown! Chargers, 29 yards. J.K. Dobbins with 18 seconds left.
With Matt Smith on the Chargers radio network. Remember, this is after the Chargers blew a 21-point lead in the second half against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday Night Football at SoFi Stadium. It's time to get to the bottom of what's fueling these Chargers, who are now sitting at 7 wins and just a couple games back of the Chiefs in the AFC West. We're pleased to welcome Shannon Farron, who is the sideline reporter for the Chargers radio network, along with Matt Smith, whom you just heard. You know, if you think about the attitude or the perspective of Chargers teams in the recent past, it's that they will find creative ways to lose, not creative ways to win. Instead, they come up with unique ways to lose that we've not ever considered before. So, Shannon, what is the biggest difference between the 2024 Chargers and those teams of the past?
Coach Harbaugh, Amy, you're always so good at hitting the nail on the head. It is absolutely a different culture here with the LA Chargers. It is a different mindset here. If you saw the game last night on Sunday Night Football, you knew that this was going to end with a Chargers defeat. Of course, they jump out with the lead early on. Of course, they let it slip away. And then, of course, you're thinking that they're going to lose. But you don't feel that way if you're on that sideline, the way that I have been and the way that everyone on this team has been. You just knew. You've known this whole year. It's been a different mindset. It goes back to week one against the Raiders. They jump out with that first touchdown, and you just knew they were going to win. It's a complete different mindset. Coaching should not be underestimated. The feeling that this team has and the mindset that it has is night and day from what it has been, at least as long as I've been here.
Well, when you say different mindset, what has changed about how they approach football?
Well, if you've looked at Jim Harbaugh's teams, whether it is the University of San Diego, whether it's Stanford, at the 49ers, Michigan, the Chargers now, you want somebody to play for, and these guys want to play for him. What's rewarded on this sideline is physicality. And if you watch this Chargers team, it's essentially kind of the same personnel they've had for the past few years, but it's a different mindset in terms of rewarding physicality and playing for Jim Harbaugh. And him warming up with Justin Herbert, you know, taking the passes in the pregame, and it goes to him not just warming up in pregame, but doing the practices with them and going through everything, not just speeches, but everything. I mean, Quentin Johnston talked about it. He is having a super efficient sophomore season. 1 out of 4 receptions goes for a touchdown. You know, he talks about Jim Harbaugh going into the cold tub in his khakis and his shoes. I mean, there's something to be said for just enthusiasm in the building, and that's what he brings.
Oh, that's the part that stands out to me, is the energy. And this is not a knock on any previous coach that they've had, but the energy that's almost indefatigable. Have you ever seen him not be fired up?
No, this is his personality. This is the way he's always been. Just like the numbers, honestly, in terms of defense, you can see like what he's done with every team is what he's doing with the Chargers. You go back to like the 2011 49ers, right? When he came in, they had no business being in the playoff conversation at all. And he turned that team around like nothing. Like I just snapped my fingers, like nothing. And he's done the same thing. In fact, like this was the most points the Chargers have allowed all season with 27, right? But like going into this game, they allowed 13.1 points per game. That's the fewest by a team with a new head coach in 20 years. The second best was that 2011 San Francisco team. It was under Jim Harbaugh. He just has this thing about coming into a facility and breathing new life into a team and making guys want to play for him.
Shannon Farron is with us from L.A. She's the Chargers sideline reporter, up close and personal with this new change in culture and the different approach and certainly the energy of Jim Harbaugh. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It's interesting, too, because he played the quarterback position. In terms of his specific impact on Justin Herbert, who he's in awe of, he tells us, right? He hears angels singing when Herbert walks out to practice. Where have you seen the impact on Justin?
Jim Harbaugh has always had a special relationship with his quarterbacks. We can go through all the programs again. We can go back to all his guys. He said this week, you know, Justin Herbert could be a tight end in the NFL. He could be an edge rusher. He's got the speed. He's got the strength. He's got the agility. He's got the athleticism. We've all seen it. He says he's off the charts. And, you know, Justin Herbert's high school coach even kind of dovetailed that. He said when he was playing football at Sheldon High, it's not even the football, honestly, Amy. It was baseball. He had this filthy fastball. They said he was the closer. He was the one they wanted on the mound at the end, that he was the power forward on the hardwood, that he was like the guy whose athleticism had him rebounding like a beast, that he was smart but never conservative. And that's what we're seeing. And his high school coach said, I've never coached anyone. And this is a guy who's had like 20 plus years experience back when Justin was in high school. He said, I've never coached anyone who cares more about winning than Justin Herbert. And that's Jim Harbaugh.
Right. That's true. It's almost like they're peas in a pod. Completely different generations, yeah. But they think alike or have that same approach. And obviously the wins are there, which is a big deal. That really helps with building culture. Now it's 7-3. I'm also blown away by the fact that other than Herbert, you're talking about a completely different complement of weapons for this offense at running back, at wide receiver. But how have you seen this group come together in a way that it's not taking forever? It's really working.
Amy, Ladd McConkey had an incredible game last night, and he has been the surefire guy for Justin Herbert. He has his trust, and it's amazing, and it's wonderful, but like everybody eats on this offense. It's not just Ladd, who has actually amazing yards after the catch as well, but it is JK in the backfield. It is Gus Edwards in the backfield. It is Joshua Palmer, Quentin Johnson, who's had an amazing sophomore season. 1 out of 4 receptions goes for a touchdown. He's been able to prove everybody wrong, and it was so nice to see him do that on a national stage. But it seems like, and Greg Roman talked about this, that from week to week, their offensive identity, while being the same physical, will change based on their opponent.
The culture around the Chargers for years, as we've talked about, has been more where you expect them to lose. You almost expect them to do something, kind of a boneheaded mistake at the end of a game, and all of that goes away. It's not like they've kept a lot of the same people outside of the few veterans. What have they had to say, some of these veterans, about this change in culture and how different it feels to them?
I love that you asked that, because that was the major question that everyone wanted to ask last night after the game of, we've seen this movie before. We've seen this movie play out. We've seen the Chargers get to this great, substantial lead and then it being squandered away. And there was talk from people who are not on the sideline or close to the team last night of, oh, here we go again. They're chargering. That has not been the feeling the entire year. I've got to say, just being down there, it just feels different. There's a different attitude. There's a different mindset. It's the Harbaugh effect. is also just these guys. Derwin James is one of the leaders, Justin Herbert as well, where that's not going to be what happens anymore. They're over that. It's done. You look at the Bengals, for instance, and you look at how many one-score games they've lost this year,
right?
And you'll hear all the pundits being like, oh, they're just one score away. Well, the Chargers have heard that for like 3 years.
Oh,
you're just one score away. And it's like, well, that's the entire season. That means nothing. That means you're losing.
Right.
For this team to flip the narrative, as Jim Harbaugh says, turn the worm.
What?
I don't know where that comes from, but that's his thing. He's like, we've turned the worm, guys.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Then, like, you'll hear it from the guys in the locker room. They're like, we've turned the worm. It shoots you off to Google. You're like, what the hell does that mean? Just like every Harbaughism, right? Like, what does that mean? Where does that come from? But they have. They've turned the worm. There's no feeling on that sideline. Even when the Bengals crept back in last night, there was no feeling that the Chargers weren't going to win that game. That whole mentality is out of the window.
I love it. It's not just internal. It's now becoming external as well. And you're right. He really is. If we're talking about creepy crawlies, he really is the head of the snake. So great to have him back in the NFL. Shannon Farron is with us from the Chargers sidelines and their radio network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What do they need to be a Super Bowl contender? If we're going to make that leap, Shannon, what do they need?
I would say consistency in the run game. It's a Greg Roman hallmark. It's something that they are still trying to achieve. You see it in flashes and bursts. The offensive line is outstanding. You know, when you look at what the D-line's been able to do with just this past week, with Joey Bosa and Thule and the way that they've been able to put pressures on the quarterback more than any other team in the league this last week, and that was without Khalil Mack, this team is all about the line of scrimmage. They say that that's the spear, right? The tip of the spear is the line of the scrimmage. That is their mentality. And then they say that Derwin James, of course, is like the cutlass, another pirate weapon. He can fit into every position and be effective and just be like that Swiss Army knife kind of guy. When you look at the point of attack, the line of scrimmage, I don't think you get better than the LA Chargers. And like I said to you earlier, I love that they're under the radar right now, that no one's paying attention to how powerful they are. When you look at that O-line, Joe Alt is the number one rated offensive lineman right now at his position in the league, but you don't hear about him. You don't hear about that D-line. You don't hear about the fact that the Chargers have held teams to the fewest points, you know, in the entire season. And I kind of think that's working in their favor. When you ask, like, what do they need? I don't think they need anything. When Justin Herbert is healthy, and he can use his legs, and he can make everyone eat. Like, when it comes to the guys in the backfield and his receiving core, they may not be stars. They may not get, like, the headlines, but he makes them rise to the occasion. They rise to the occasion for him. Mm. They're all stars. I mean, they're all pros, but, yes. Like, there's nothing this team is missing, I don't think. The only thing I can say right now is, like, it was really hard last night to watch Denzel Perryman, who's been a huge defensive force, go out with that groin injury. He's been dealing with it all week, and that's going to be a problem. He's been amazing. The linebacker core is great. I really can't tell you a weakness unless it's injuries that are unforeseeable. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
That's tremendous, especially in year one of a rebuild, if you will. Wondering what you hear from fans in terms of excitement level, the energy, and other, when they play in their own stadium, A, people consider it the Rams facility, or B, it's more fans from other teams who've made the trip to LA there along with their favorite team. So do you get the sense that the fan base is also energized?
Oh my God, you're like nailing it. I was going to tell you, I was anticipating this stadium to be full of Bengals fans because it's a established fan base. Of course, the Bengals fans are incredible. They're wonderful people. They're great. They show out. They travel. So I was expecting that because that's what we've seen recently. Like, let's be honest about it. The Chargers came here. They played in the soccer stadium. They moved into the Rams stadium. And it was a hard go. And we all kind of made light of it. But I got to tell you, Amy, last week, the Titans game, when they came into town, and I knew the Titans fans didn't really travel that well. This fan base was so loud. It was deafening. It was like being at freaking Arrowhead. It was like being at Mile High. It was amazing. I'm like, where did these fans come from? And yes, there's a lot of new powder blue Justin Herbert jerseys. I don't care. It was amazing. They were loud. It was great. Jim Harbaugh comes out on Monday at his press conference, and he's like, we need the fans. We need the fans. And like we've talked about, when Jim Harbaugh asks, you produce, and the fans produced, and they came out crazy. It was, by and large, all L.A. fan base for Sunday night, a primetime game against a team that has an amazing fan base. It was all Chargers fans. I'm not going to lie, not all of them knew exactly what was going on in the fourth quarter. Like, they were pretty loud when Justin Herbert was leading that last drive. I was like, quiet down. This is not the time to be loud.
It's like fans in Europe. They don't really know what they're watching. They're just excited because there's something happening.
Totally. But they were so excited, and it was so great to see. And it was like such a heartwarming moment of being an LA fan, and the Chargers have arrived.
What would you say is their signature win to this point?
That was it. It was a Cincinnati game. It was prime time. Cincinnati, it was the first team with a legit quarterback. I mean, you could argue that in week four, Patrick Mahomes came to town and he's a legit quarterback, but everybody knows the Chiefs offense is not what it has been. And that was evidenced. Everyone knew what was going to happen in Buffalo, and that's what happened. Joe Burrow was the best quarterback with the offense that he has with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins that the Chargers saw this season. And everyone was saying, going up into this game, or are they really for real? They've only faced these second-rate quarterbacks or what have you, or a diminished Chiefs offense. And the Bengals came to town with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and they held up. And they let them back into the game. They did. But it was better that they let him back into the game to show that they're not the team that lets a team back in and then collapses. They came out on top, and that was huge for their identity.
Definitely some adversity there that they faced and then stared down the barrel of that gun that they've seen so many times. It's a great point. All right, so as we wrap up, I got to tell you, one of my favorite Harbaugh moments from the season so far is where he awkwardly made his 7-8-9 joke and then repeated it so people would understand what he was talking about, which was amazing. I laughed so hard. We played it on the show. You mentioned Turn the Worm, which I've not heard before, so that's awesome. What's another favorite moment with Harbaugh so far this season?
Well, I mean, I followed Jim Harbaugh forever because I'm out in California. So I remember going to Stanford games when he was there.
Wow.
One of my favorite things about Harbaugh is actually when I first met him, I said, I haven't eaten chicken in a very long, ever since you were announced as the head coach, I haven't eaten chicken. And the reason I said that to him is because he once told one of his teams that they shouldn't eat chicken because it's a nervous animal and you don't want to be nervous. So eat chicken.
Oh my gosh.
So good, right?
Wow. He's got a mind that thinks so differently than the rest of human nature. It's awesome.
And the players love it. They love it. So whatever works.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me a little bit of Pete Carroll. And I know he's gone now, but he was in the league for such a long time. And guys almost couldn't believe that he brought the energy that he did, that he was as consistent, that excitement, that energy and enthusiasm never wore off. It was really who he was at his core. And yeah, you can stare at Harbaugh and think, is this guy for real? But you spend enough time with him and you realize this is who he is.
You're so right. I mean, you look at those games between USC and Stanford back when those two would face off, and the what's your deal and the gum and all of it. Like, they were just mano y mano. And the players always love those guys. They love crazy, and that's what those guys are.
Oh, yes. My motto in life is find people who are your kind of crazy, and the Chargers have found their crazy in Jim Harbaugh. That's amazing. All right, you can find Shannon at Shannon Farren, F-A-R-R-E-N. She's sideline reporter for the Chargers, also a radio host in her own right, and Jim Harbaugh expert, man, from the time he was back at Stanford. That's incredible. It's so much fun to talk to you. I hope we get to do it again. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Amy. Thank you so much.
It was about time we caught up and talked about the Chargers, and Shannon provides a perspective from down on the field and really underscoring that the energy is so different. Now, the Chargers went through a coaching change. They got their man, Jim Harbaugh. He's back in the NFL after a successful stint in college, winning the national championship with Michigan, but he always wanted to get back to the league. They got their guy. It's a perfect fit. What other teams are in need of their perfect fit? If not now, then by the end of the season. At A-Law Radio, we've got a post up on our show account at Amy After Hours. We'll get a spot up there on our Facebook page for you to weigh in as well. The Chargers can be a great example of how a team can turn around quickly. DeMeco Ryans, the Houston Texans, how a team can turn around quickly. Even Nick Sirianni, as much as it's been a challenge the last couple years, they've changed coordinators and those decisions fall on him. His first 2 years with the Eagles, they made the playoffs and then they went to the Super Bowl in year number two. You can find the right guy and instantly see a major change. Anybody out there want Bill Belichick? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm playing who we have to win the game. I mean, that's just, you know, ever who's healthy. We had a long week of practice, but we had a number of guys that didn't make it. So, you know, these guys practice. We're playing the best players to win the game.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
No decisions made based on the future. No business decisions, if you will, for Mike McCarthy. No thoughts of what's down the road instead, and I'm sure this is the case. I actually believe him when he says it. This is the case. He's focused on the here and now and trying to win football games. Maybe he's like the rest of us as humans. In times of quiet or in times of reflection, he recognizes that this may very well come to an end, and that's okay. I mean, that's something we all deal with as human beings. Now, do we deal with the alarming rate of turnover that takes place in pro sports and pro coaching ranks? Well, no, we don't. It's big business and there are high expectations. And while these guys make a lot of money, it also comes with very little job security or certainty, even when you do win. We've had coaches that have been fired the year after they make a Super Bowl, the year after they win a Super Bowl. I have no doubt that Mike McCarthy is trying to stay focused on the here and now because that's the way he can do his job. I mean, that's what you get from athletes a lot of times when they're going through really difficult challenges in their personal lives, away from the field or the court or the ice. What do? They find a safe haven where they can lock in at their craft and they're able to force everything else out. I've done that before as a radio host. Focus on the 4 hours of radio that I need to do and somehow can push the rest of it out until I say good morning and boom at the end of the show after hour number 4. He's got to focus on how he can win and if they can possibly turn it around. I know it sounds nutso, but they are still in a position where they could end up with a 500 record. They could rattle off a bunch of wins in a row toward the end of the season. But the home games are what stand out to me. And to me, this is the nail in the coffin, so to speak, with Mike McCarthy. The buck stops with him. Is it all his fault? No. But he hired the defensive coordinator that has seen that the de-escalation of that defense, effectively pulling the teeth out of that defense. It's not just injuries. It's the fact that the defense doesn't scare anyone. And the home record is the issue. 6 straight home games now. They've trailed by at least 20 points in their own building. That goes back to the game against the Packers in the wild card round. That, to me, is the most damaging part. That, to me, is the most damning piece of evidence, is that your team is no longer protecting its home field. We've talked about body language. We've talked about facial expressions. We've talked about it not looking like they have a whole lot of hope out there. And also, that boils down to your leadership. And right now, they appeared to have a void when it comes to leadership. So for those reasons, plus the losing is not something that Jerry Jones and his family will stand for, I do believe that we're looking at a coaching change in Dallas at the end of this season. I don't think it's going to happen in the middle of the year. Jerry has answered that question a zillion times, but I do think you'll likely see a change at the end of this season. Where else? Well, how about Jacksonville? I mean, Doug Peterson has also answered the question ad nauseum about his job status with the Jaguars, unable to figure out what in the hell is going on.
I think you got to be really, really careful when you start pointing fingers at certain people. It's a dangerous thing, and I'm not going to do that. Not doing it. Not right now. Because that's, as a head coach in this league, that's going through what we're going through, you're pointing a finger. And if it's going to be pointed, it needs to be pointed at me. Start with me.
I appreciate his accountability. Kind of feel like the writing is on the wall there too, even with Shad Khan giving them the vote of confidence, so to speak, Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson. I did see a report on Monday, Marco Belletti's here in studio, that Shad Khan is likely to keep Trent Baalke, maybe make a coaching change, but he is likely to keep Trent Baalke in the front office. So we're kind of going through some of the teams that I'm thinking about. Now, I would say this is just me, my own perception. I could be completely and horribly wrong, but I believe both the Jets and the Saints will end up hiring head coaches, not sticking with Jeff Ulbrich and sticking with Darren Rizzi. I mean, Rizzi's never been in a coaching situation in his life. He was a special teams coordinator, so he, I don't want to say he's not head coaching material, but just at this point, I would be stunned. There's only 32 of these gigs, and you've got some really impressive coaching candidates that are out there. The only thing I would say about New York is that Aaron Rodgers has made it clear that he would like to play for Ulbrich the rest of his time in the league. Don't ask me why. That's just him. And so at this point, if the Jets determine they want to keep Aaron, I don't know why you would. I can't make a legit case for keeping Aaron Rodgers because it's already 2 years of a failed experiment. Unless it's the cap, unless it's something along those lines, it doesn't make any sense to me why you would run it back. Maybe they keep Ulbrich if they keep Aaron Rodgers, but those two I would think would end up being brand new head coaching hires. I'm going to put Jacksonville on the list. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put Dallas on the list. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to put Vegas on the list. Mm-hmm. I think Antonio Pierce is tremendous, and part of the reason is they do not have a freaking quarterback. They just don't. They weren't going to draft one this year. They didn't find a good free agent. Gardner Minshew has got 13 turnovers. He's not the answer. We know what he is. So I'll go with those five for now on my list. I can think of a few others, but what about you?
To add to that list, let me see. Try to think of, I mean, everyone that you said there is 100%. Even Ulbrich, Aaron Rodgers says a lot of things. He said the same thing about Robert Saleh, and two seconds later, Saleh was shown the door, and it was Rodgers. I didn't do this, so you never know what Aaron Rodgers is actually thinking, although we actually kind of do know what Aaron Rodgers is thinking. He's just not going to necessarily tell you. Ulbrich is not coming back in New York. That would be stunning.
I'd be stunned.
Even if Aaron Rodgers does find his way back for next season, because they don't have a lot of other options. I don't know if Carolina makes another change.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but you know what? See, the wild card there is Tepper. I don't know what he's thinking. Do they think that Canales is going to be okay and Bryce Young, they've salvaged it and now he's been better. They've won a couple of games. Or does the temperamental owner look at it and go, you won, let's say they win 4 games this year. We're still not on the right track. We're moving on again. He's a wild card. I honestly don't know. I would also say I would throw the Bears in there. I'd be stunned if Matt Eberflus is back with the expectations that they had and how far south this thing has gone. And once you start firing coordinators, it's a good chance that you're next out the door with that. And I was stunned that they brought Eberflus back, and I thought he was on a short leash. I thought they needed to make the playoffs. So I would definitely put him on that list to add to the ones that you have. Anybody else?
Giants, do you think they keep Brian Dable?
I don't. I think Dable stays. I think Shane stays as well. I think the Giants would have to have an epic collapse of, I mean, to the point where they look like the Cowboys, where everybody has quit on the team, for them to move on from Dable, which is possible. At 2-8 is possible. But that we haven't seen yet, and I still feel like Dable has somewhat of a pulse, and I think everyone in that building is now resigned to the fact that you didn't have a quarterback, and which is why you're 2-8 instead of 5-5 and right in the muck. Because that's where the Giants feel like they should be, and I feel like they think that Daniel Jones' inability to make plays has cost them a few games. They should be right around 500 and playing and toying with the outskirts of the playoffs, and because of Jones, they're not. So in that regard, I think Shane and Dable will come back.
So I think Carolina keeps Dave Canales. I agree with you about Tepper. He's fired, what, three coaches in season the last 3 years? Is it three or four times that he's fired a coach in season? It's at least three. So I think with Dave Canales, you're seeing some of the steps forward, especially with Bryce Young. They're sticking with Bryce Young. I would ask this, though. What about two in the AFC North? Cleveland and Cincinnati. Is it? I don't think it's Kevin Stefanski's fault. That's just my opinion. I think that last year, him winning Coach of the Year and them making it to the playoffs was huge. So I think he stays. But what about those two franchises?
I would say no to Cincinnati. I think they'll chalk it up to a bad season. And I think that they'll look at the bulk of work and the body of work and stay with Taylor. The Browns is an interesting one for me. I feel like that's a question of if Stefanski is on board with bringing Deshaun Watson back and trying to fix, he keeps his job.
If
he is not, if he walks in and says, look, I don't care if this guy is fully healthy. We are not going into this season with Deshaun Watson. I am not playing this game again. I'm not doing this. I think it would be, it would behoove Kevin Stefanski to do that because I think that they would fire him. And I think he would have a job 5 seconds later. I think everybody would love to go get Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
I think he's been handcuffed, and I think the Browns will continue to handcuff him because that contract of Watson makes it impossible for them to get out from under. So if Stefanski wants to keep his job in Cleveland, he keeps his mouth shut, and he has Deshaun Watson coming off an Achilles, and maybe he can justify, I've got another guy until Watson is healthy, and I can avoid playing Watson, and if we get off to a good start, I don't have to go to him. Maybe he keeps his job there. If he walks in and says, if you're going to give me Watson and I got to play him, then I don't want this job. Fire me. And I think the Browns follow suit.
I know that Aaron Rodgers came back from his Achilles relatively quickly.
You can still see. I mean, he did it in year one. He did it in week one.
Right, it's true. It's not the same time span with Deshaun Watson, so maybe he's not even ready, or maybe he is, but it's more than that, obviously. He can't stay on the field. Not 1 year since they've had him has he been on the field more than a handful of games.
But more importantly, when he's been on the field, he's been
awful.
That's the problem.
In large part, because you play four games a year, and that's it, and then you're shut down, and when do you get that rhythm back?
I think Stefanski has shown that he can win.
Agreed.
Without Watson, and for whatever the reason, whether it's Watson is just completely shot, or it doesn't fit with Stefanski's system, which I struggle with because there's been so many guys that has. It doesn't work. But I don't think the Haslams are ready to pull the plug on that because they look very, 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 very silly when they do that. And owners don't like to look silly. And I think they'll blame it on the head coach.
Oh, it's too late for that.
I think they'll blame it on Stefanski. If he holds his ground. He may not hold his ground. That's definitely part of it, too. He may look at it and go, you know what? I can avoid this because he may not be physically ready and I can get another quarterback. And if I get off to a good start, I don't have to go back to Watson. Maybe he plays that game. I think that Stefanski will probably walk into that office and say, I'm not doing this. And it becomes an amicable split.
All right. We'll see. That's interesting. I think that the ownership can't avoid looking silly or looking like it has egg on its face after that deal. The entire league said, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, bad idea, reacted, but that was the only way they could get Deshaun. They were looking to make a splash, and obviously it did not work. There's a lot of people out there saying, I told you so, but I don't know how you can pin that on Stefanski, though I understand what you're saying, if he's going to stand up against them, maybe. So actually, that wouldn't be nearly as many teams turning over as we had last year, which was 8. So it generally is about a quarter of the league, but we've got so many brand new head coaches in the league that eventually you run out of places to make changes. So if we go Dallas, Jacksonville, Vegas, which would be second in 2 years, the Jets, the Saints, the Bears, that's, I'm using my air quotations, only 6.
Keep in mind, how many games left in the season? There are a lot of teams.
Week 11, 7
there are a
weeks.
Lot of teams that can still have their season go down the tubes, which can change everything. You end the season on a 6-game losing streak, and everything falls apart. That can change. There really is. I mean, You mentioned the Giants before. Brian Daboll's still not safe because they're 2-8, and if they wind up losing out, you could see John Mara looking and going, you know what? I'm moving on, just like he did a couple years ago. He didn't want to fire Joe Judge. Joe Judge basically fired himself because the Giants were so bad, and down the stretch, he had Jake Fromm running quarterback sneaks from first down on his own, like, 5-yard line. It was almost like he was giving a middle finger to the GM. Hey, you give me no players. The owner saw all this and said, all yous are out.
We got to talk about those Giants.
That becomes, there's a lot more football and bad football to be played to see if you wind up losing your job.
And ownership is going to come into play with Belichick because of their relationship, too. So that might be in his head if the Giants look terrible ending the season.
Well, if he thinks he can get Belichick, there are a lot of teams in the league that if you could get Belichick, you fire your head coach.
I'll say this, and this I'll stand on. If the Giants call Bill Belichick, he doesn't answer any other phone call but that. Yep. He would bookend his career with the Giants. He would be first in line.
He loves that legacy. But he coached there before, of course.
That's where he wants to finish. It's a question of whether the Giants want him to finish there.
Interesting. Oh, the blood thickens. We do have Giants news that we have to get to. Also coming up, a couple of big performances, big moments in the NBA. Damian Lillard returns. The Clippers and the Warriors go down to the wire. Also coming up on Tuesday, if you hadn't seen the schedule, how do you not have it memorized? The Cavaliers put their 15-0 mark on the line against the Celtics in Boston. So we'll be talking about that game as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Well, I'm staying long and straight on the golf course is easier than ever with PXG clubs. Take your game to a whole new level and save $10 per club at pxg.com/football and use code football. Texans having their way with the Cowboys, and it was led by Joe Mixon.
Baxton and I, Stover and Mixon, first and goal from the one. Hand off Joe, right side run. He's in! Touchdown! Hat trick! Joe Mixon scores.
Third rushing touchdown of the night from Mixon. He had 153 total yards. Texans dismissed the Cowboys 34-10. Call courtesy of the Texans Radio Network. C.J. Stroud, 257 yards passing. Nico Collins back. He hauled in 5 passes for 54 yards. As Houston's now 7-4. Cowboys 3-7. Giants a change as Daniel Jones goes to the bench. Tommy DeVito getting the nod as the starter as they flip between 1-3. So why did head coach Brian Daboll give DeVito the jump over Drew Locke, who has served as the backup and will continue to do so?
We went back and we looked at a lot of stuff. We talked about a lot of things and just felt like this was the right move at this time for us. So Tommy will be working hard to get ready to play, and I know Drew will be a good teammate with him, and we'll just focus on trying to get better and get ready for this week.
Elsewhere, Brock Purdy dealing with right shoulder soreness. He's said to be day-to-day. NBA Bucks looking at Damian Lillard down the stretch.
Lillard drives inside, scoops to the hoop, lays it in with 3.9 seconds to go. The Bucks have taken a one-point lead, and Damian Lillard somehow finds that smallest of openings.
18 points, 10 assists for Lillard. Bucks clip the Rockets 101-100. Brooke Lopez, 27 points and 10 rebounds as well. Call courtesy of the Bucks Radio Network. Rest of your scores. Heat roll the Sixers 106-89. Jimmy Butler, 30 points, 10 boards. Hawks slip by the Kings 109-108. Clippers held off the Warriors 102-99. Knicks dominate the Wizards 134-106. Magic top the Suns 109-99. Raptors overpowered the Pacers 130-119 as R.J. Barrett at 39 as the Bulls finished off the Pistons 122-112. College hoops, Gonzaga buried San Diego State 80-67, while Auburn thumped North Alabama 102-69. Rookie of the Year's National League goes to Paul Skeens of the Pirates. Yankees, Luis Gil in the AL. I'm Marco Belletti.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Landslide, your choice for Monday MVP, Josh Allen, Bills quarterback. And I dare say he sealed it the moment he bounced off the last defender and spun into the end zone, hitting the ground with the ball in the late stages against the Chiefs, only to bounce up and celebrate with Bills Mafia there in Orchard Park. Your choice for Monday MVP via your votes on Twix and Facebook. As I say, more than 50% for Josh Allen. Thank you for voting. This portion of the show brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. I'm compiling a list of franchises who I believe are likely to make a coaching change either before the end of the season or in the off season. You can add, subtract, you can tell me why at Amy After Hours. And coming up next hour, we'll give you the options for TD of the week as we roll into a Touchdown Tuesday. Now, we're going to get to some basketball as well because we had Damian Lillard returning for the Milwaukee Bucks. We also had a game that went down to the wire between Warriors and Clippers. Warriors managed to dig themselves out of a big hole. And they had multiple shots at the Clippers at the end of the game. It was a crazy final, say, 30 seconds of game time in the fourth quarter. So that's ahead. And then, as I mentioned, Cavaliers are still undefeated with their stiffest test on the road on Tuesday night. So we still have a lot in front of us. But there is also just this coming out of week 11, this feeling of dread a little bit for the coaches that are facing the end of their tenures. And I know you could say they get paid handsomely. Yes, they do. But I don't know that money fixes what it is that keeps them up at night. They can take care of their families. That's tremendous. But in the case of Mike McCarthy, I wonder if he will get another head coaching job. I don't know that he will. Maybe he needs a break. He definitely took a break after Green Bay, but he won a Super Bowl in Green Bay. They went to another Super Bowl. The fact that he has been so constantly criticized and maligned in Dallas makes me wonder if there are other teams that would hire him or even if he wants to coach again, because it's been nonstop. And that's part of being the head coach of America's team. And yes, I'm being slightly tongue in cheek, but you are in the headlines all the time for better or for worse. And more often it's for worse. And his coaching status constantly being questioned. I wonder, is this the last time we'll see him as an NFL head coach? I wonder the same thing about Doug Peterson. Now, is it the worst thing ever? No, because as Ron Rivera told us, he wants to coach. He doesn't necessarily want to manage. He wants to be part of player development. He doesn't necessarily want to deal with all of the other stuff that comes with being a head coach. There are some good quality coaches out there. But yes, as we get through week 11 and closer to the final weeks of the season, I start to feel this dread for the guys who will get fired, because that sucks. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.